I've offered you a sheet of paper there that you can look at. I intend to just look at that now as a preparation for next week, because I'm arguing here for the fact that while I'm not persuaded by the arguments that people give that chapters 1 to 9 need dividing up, and while it's obvious that chapter 10 to 13 is a unit, I don't think that chapter 10 to 13 could possibly be part of the same letter as chapter 1 to 9. Furthermore, I think there's elements of evidence, though not all scholars agree, that chapter 10 to 13 is written after chapter 1 to 9. I suggest it was the following year when Titus went down now, as we've just said, with the two brothers to organise the collection. In the meantime, another group of people have come, perhaps from Jerusalem itself, troubling Paul, and there's been a turn and a disappointment and a whole change of mood. And Paul, possibly from Western Macedonia the following year, 56, while he's working his way into the southern part of Illyricum, maybe then Titus catches up with him and Paul rushes off this postscript with a whole new mood and concern. So I just want to look at it with you now. We'll do the text next week, but just by way of preparation, would you look with me at this question of the relationship between 2 Corinthians 10 to 13 and the letter we've just looked at. So I say here, I find persuasive the opinion of those who state that these chapters and chapters 1 to 9 cannot belong to the same letter. While both sections show that the relations between Paul and the Corinthians have been strained, chapters 10 to 13, as the following chart demonstrates, indicate quite different perceptions by Paul of the circumstances prevailing in Corinth, and so of the current relationship, state of the relationship between himself and the Corinthian community. I'll read to you certain things that Paul said in the letter we've just completed, and things he's going to say in these last chapters, and you make up your own mind on it. So in the chapters 1 to 9, Paul has said, "You stand firm in the faith." Chapter 1, verse 24. He's going to say in the following text, chapter 13, 5, "Examine yourself to see whether you are living in the faith." In chapters 1 to 9, he said, "I often boast about you. I have great pride in you. I'm filled with consolation. I'm overjoyed." That was chapter 7, verse 4. And you might also recall the opening section of wonderful gratitude in chapter 1, verse 3 to 7. And he also said in this letter that we've just completed, "I rejoice because your grief," the grief caused by Paul's letter, "led to repentance." And in chapter 7, verse 11, he said, "What earnestness this godly grief has produced in you, what eagerness to clear yourselves, what indignation, what alarm, what longing, what zeal, what punishment. At every point, you've proved yourself guiltless in the matter." And he went on to say, "I have complete confidence in you." How could he, in the same letter, write what we're going to read next week? "If I love you more, am I to be loved less?" Chapter 12, verse 15. Then a little later, "I fear that when I come I may find that there may perhaps be quarrelling, jealousy, anger, selfishness, slander, gossip, conceit and disorder." And then in chapter 13, verse 10, he'll say, "I write these things while I am away from you, so that when I come, I may not have to be severe in using the authority that the Lord has given me." How could he write that in the same letter that he's just said, I have complete confidence in you. In the earlier letter, chapter 8 and 9, as we've just seen, Paul feels free to encourage them to be generous in the collection for Jerusalem. But in the verses we're going to read next week, he'll say, when we see in chapter 12, verse 16 to 18, Paul feels the need to defend himself against false accusation in reference to his use of money. And finally, in chapter 8, verse 18 to 19, Titus, he says, with Titus we're sending the brother who's famous among all the churches for his proclaiming the good news. And not only that, he's also been appointed by the churches to travel with us while we are administering this generous undertaking for the glory of the Lord himself and to show our goodwill. In the verses we're going to read, chapter 12, verse 18, he says, note the past tense, I urged Titus to go, and I sent the brother with him. Titus didn't take advantage of you, did he? Did we not conduct ourselves with the same spirit? Did we not take the same steps? I'm not suggesting there's proof there, but, well, you read it for yourselves and see how it goes. My own feeling is that these next chapters are what I suggested, a later addendum, a postscript sent after the winter, the next year, because of Titus's disappointment and because, again, the change of mood in Corinth. In chapters 1 to 9, the prevailing tone is one of relief at the change of heart that Titus found in Corinth and has just reported to Paul. By contrast, the failing tone, the prevailing tone of chapters 10 to 13 is one of profound hurt and disappointment. Now, the matter is still debated among scholars. It seems to me that the evidence points to chapters 10 to 13 being composed after the earlier letters. Titus and his companions returned to Corinth late in 55 to get the collection underway again, according to the plan enunciated by Paul in 2 Corinthians 8 to 9. And presumably they took that letter with them. However, troublesome apostles had arrived in Corinth in the meantime and had stirred up anti-Paul feeling. Titus met up with Paul somewhere in Macedonia, and probably in 56, and reported the deteriorating situation to him. And chapters 10 to 13 are Paul's response, brackets or part of it. Because chapters 10 to 13 do not belong to chapters 1 to 9, and because in all likelihood they post-date the earlier chapters, we must avoid using them to throw light on the earlier chapters. This is important. It's highly probable that those whom Paul refers to in these last chapters as, quote, false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ, and he also describes them as super apostles, it's highly likely that they're not the same as those who were causing the problems in Corinth to which Paul refers in chapters 1 to 9. Paul explains to the community the complexities of the apostolic ministry. It's not for himself that he does this. He wants them for Christ. He's afraid that the personal attack on him will lead to the community drifting, not just from him, but from the good news which he has given them. His, quote, anxiety for all the churches urges him to show the ringleaders up as deceivers. Recall to mind the strong words spoken by Jesus against those who claim to lead the people and who exercised power over them, but who filled them with fear and cluttered their lives with observances, keeping them from the love of God. Woe upon you, Pharisees! Woe upon you, scribes! while Paul expresses similar sentiments here. These counterfeit apostles seem to have launched an all-out attack on Paul's personal integrity and authority. They claim that he lacked their spiritual gifts and that he acted only according to the flesh. He may have sounded strong and assured in his letters, but when he came in person, they claim, his bodily presence is weak and his speech is contemptible. Paul keeps insisting that he's never asked for money from them. The troublemakers accuse him of not loving the Corinthians as much as he loves the Philippians, from whom he was known to have accepted financial help. They also accuse him of getting money in a roundabout way through the collection, which he claimed was for the poor in Jerusalem, but which he was using for himself. We'll read this in the following chapters. So Paul sets out to expose these men, and in his most personal outburst, he pleads with the community which he loves so much to come to their senses. The fact that Paul spent the winter of 56 to 57 in Corinth as a guest of Gaius and had sufficient peace to be able to compose there the letter to the Romans seems to indicate that this final, passionate outburst succeeded and finally brought the Corinthians to their senses. So we come now to 2 Corinthians chapter 10 through to 13. What I suggest to you is that Paul was in Ephesus for 3 years, left perhaps autumn, that is July or whatever, after Pentecost, but while you can leave, not in the dead of winter. So he leaves in the latter part of the year 55. He's already sent Titus over here to Corinth to find out how they've responded to his letter, which we've lost, that hurt letter. And he decides not to go himself, so he goes up here and drops in at Troas, and he'd been in Troas before when he first came, before he went to Europe, but only briefly, and he starts a mission there, but he's too disturbed, perhaps. He really wants to know what's happening in Corinth. So he makes his way quickly over to Macedonia. Doesn't say where, but clearly he would have gone to Philippi, for the places that he knew. So imagine him here, and Titus has come up in the meantime and meets him there and gives him good news that the people in Corinth were stirred by his letter and they're sorry what they did. They've realised who the problem was. They've fronted this man who was doing most of the accusing and so on. So it looks good, and Paul began that letter, chapter 1 of 2 Corinthians, which is with joy and consolation and so on. I think it's likely that, therefore, before the winter of 55, he wanted to get it away before winter, quickly. So he sent the letter, chapters 1 to 9, with Titus, down here to Corinth. Then he spends the winter, he's got to spend it somewhere, so he spends the winter with his friends in Philippi or Thessalonica or somewhere there. And then when the snows start to melt and that, so we're now into 56, March, April 56, Paul begins a mission in Western Macedonia. The Via Egnatia is the Latin word for it. Starts over here on the Bosphorus, comes through, he goes right to there. So it comes through Philippi, through Thessalonica, and goes west straight across and branches. It goes to Apollonia or Dyrrhachium. Two possible ways for the road to go on the west coast. That would be in modern Albania, just south of Dalmatia, the Dalmatian coast. So Paul seems to have spent some months in this area, the summer of 56, if you like, because he tells us when he gets to Corinth and writes to the, we'll do it very shortly, to the Romans, that he's spread the faith as far as Illyricum. Illyricum is the Latin province, which includes Dalmatia, the Dalmatian coast, and so on. He came somewhere around here. In the meantime, Titus has come back, that's my suggestion to you, with quite bad news. In the meantime, see, it's been about a year since Titus came up. You've got a bit of travelling, and then there's the winter, and now when he went back to Corinth, another group apparently have arrived from Jerusalem, the kind of Judaizer group, the group that are against Paul. They tracked him down everywhere he went. He didn't have a very peaceful time from some of these Jewish Christian missionaries who never got the message about the universality of the Christianity. They always kept binding it into Judaism too closely. So he comes back, meets up with Paul somewhere here, and with this news, so Paul has to send this quick PS back to them, and that's what we're about to read. To come to the end before I begin, it must have been pretty successful, this final letter, because at the end, when he does come down to Corinth in 56, just before the winter, he spends 3 months in Corinth. He has leisure to write the letter to the Romans. So he must have been in a reasonably peaceful place. He was put up by a man called Gaius for the winter, so he had time. And that's his most thought-out letter. We'll begin next week, God willing. I will be here anyhow if you want to come. It's the letter to the Romans, which is a superb... It's the first... There's only two letters Paul has which are simply what he wants to say, without answering questions or debating. So they run from the beginning to the end. You're getting Paul's mind really clearly set out. Whereas in an ordinary letter, you can't do that. You're responding and you're worrying and you're saying, you know, you're all over the place in a way. These are just theses, really, both of them, and they're both superb. Well, he's able to do that in Corinth before he goes to Jerusalem. So this is his letter.